Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of GBB Live. Yes, this is Parker Fleming. Joe Molinax will not be on the show because his football season started, and with a shortened season, he's playing two games a week. So he let me run the reins here. You can find the podcast on Twitter at GBB Live, and you can find every episode of GBB Live, the Core 4 podcast, the 3&D podcast, and the Starty 5 podcast on the Grizzly Bear Blues podcast network on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcast. And Grizzly Bear Blues is a blog under SB Nation. You can find it on the web at grizzlybearblues.com or on Twitter at SB and Grizzlies. I'm your host, Parker Fleming, and with me today is a columnist from the Commercial Appeal, and he is the host of the Giannotto and Jeffrey Show every weekday from 2 to 4 on 92.9 ESPN. This is Mark Giannotto. Mark, how are you doing today, sir?
Oh, not bad, Parker. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. And obviously, to get right down to it, Justice Winslow is back. We can stop, you know, dreaming of what he can be and just kind of taking bits and pieces from his healthy days in Miami to envision him next to John Morant and eventually Jaren Jackson Jr. So obviously he's rusty. There's no way around that. He's probably shooting about like a little under 25% from the field. The 3-point shot looking like a rainbow with not a lot of legs. But I mean, what do you expect from a guy that just returned to basketball after 400 days missing? What did you make out of his two games thus far? Is there anything positive that's caught your eye so far about his game?
Positive, I guess, would be he doesn't look like he has a hitch in his step like Chandler Parsons did when he first came back from a significant injury as a significant acquisition. So I guess that's good. Otherwise, his first two games have been – and, you know, defensively, again, he looks like he's, you know, moving around okay, whether it's, you know, guarding people or little flashes, little bursts. It looks like he's healthy. He's just, like you said, he's obviously rusty and has not shot the ball well. And frankly, his shot looks all out of whack. I don't know if, you know, I've watched him I watched him more as a college player than as a professional, to be perfectly honest, but I have seen him as a pro. I can't imagine when he shot 38%, his stroke looked like it did the first couple games. So that's something to keep an eye on. And like you mentioned, it might be because of his legs. It might be because he's been out for so long. But hopefully as each game progresses, he starts to progress. But the first two were, pretty ugly, to be quite honest.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. It's been a little ugly. I would say the real silver linings of his play thus far is just how he's defended guys like Devin Booker and Luka Doncic, because on the next great Grizzlies team, it's not going to be Dylan Brooks taking on that responsibility as he has the past year and a half. You're looking at that being Justice Winslow. With that, one of the questions on our Grizzly Bear Blues roundtable today, shout out to the writers that contributed on, was, what is the best use of Justice Winslow? And right now we're seeing him off the bench. And, you know, the first game's kind of a scratch. He's playing next to John Conchar, Sean McDermott, and Gorgie Dang. What is the best use of Justice Winslow to you, Mark? Is it his role off the bench, or is it what many envision him being as the starting three of the future?
Yeah, that's an interesting dilemma, and that's what these next 15 games I'm going to be paying attention to, because one thing I think that that feels like got highlighted a little bit in these first two games, and you don't want to draw too many conclusions off of it, but I think we all envisioned that wing, that ideal wing alongside John Jared, because of the opportunities that Ja Morant creates as like a drive and kick point guard. You want that wing, I would think, to be a good 3-point shooter. And when you look at Justice Winslow's numbers, he's had a year or two where he has been a capable 3-point shooter. But to me, I think I'm not worried that Justice Winslow is going to be able to get back at some point to the level, somewhere near the level he was playing before he got injured when he was in Miami. I do wonder if he's the third guy, if you will. Like, he feels more like a fourth or fifth guy in your, if we're talking about pecking order on, as you put it, the next great Grizzlies team. And so that would be my one concern here, even early on, is that, and maybe, you know, if you ask the Grizzlies front office, they would say they never envisioned Justice Winslow as the number three guy on a great Grizzlies team. We just kind of, some people kind of just ran with that when they traded for him. But I do worry, I think he needs to be more of an offensive threat for him to really be that guy on the wing. Like, it's great that he's a great defensive player, and, you know, you need that in a lineup featuring Ja Morant, it appears, because Ja is going to be more in the Stephen Curry ilk, where, you know, he is this fantastic offensive player that, frankly, you'd rather him focus his energy on that side of the ball, and you come up with ways to, whether through personnel or through scheme, hide him on defense. And Justice is the type of player in a hypothetical lineup with Ja, gives you flexibility like that because of the different positions he can defend. So it's kind of twofold. It's like, it feels like I'm convinced Justice Winslow is a good NBA player and a guy who can be on a, you know, be an important piece on a great team. But is he like the missing piece that we all think they're sort of missing still to go alongside John Jaren long term? I have my doubts about that.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. And I know a lot of our writers agreed with that sentiment on our round table. It's, you know, he could be a piece, but that third guy's probably not on the roster. It's probably not Justice Winslow. And there are a lot of concerns that you just alluded to, especially with his offensive shot or offensive fit next to Ja, because we don't know how his jumper's going to progress. I mean, I don't think it's ever going to be like this, but will it ever be that 38% that he shot in his healthy years of Miami? I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
But I really do like how you use the Stephen Curry comparison, just of how Ja is going to be like an offensive hub that probably should focus more of his energy there, because feel free to agree or disagree with me here, but it's crazy to say that the Grizzlies brought in Justice Winslow not to be the third guy, but to be the Grizzlies version of the guy they traded him for, and that's Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison. A guy who hopefully, you know, maybe isn't a great three-point shooter, but a timely three-point shooter, a guy who can create some off the dribble, and a guy who gives you a lot of flexibility defensively, can guard, you know, anyone. You know, you hypothetically, when you envision Luka Doncic, he can cover, or excuse me, Luka Doncic, Justice Winslow, hypothetically, you'd think, you know, we mentioned already, you put him on Devin Booker and Luka Doncic, but he also can cover someone like LeBron in a playoff series, or and, you know, obviously no one stops LeBron, but he's the type of guy who maybe can slow down LeBron, kind of like Andre Iguodala has done in some of these NBA finals. He's never really stopped LeBron, but he's at least provided some resistance. And so Yeah, you know, and they haven't really had that type of guy. I know Dylan is sort of like that, but, like, since Jay Crowder was traded, that's sort of what Jay Crowder was. You know, you'd hope Justice Winslow is obviously a higher ceiling version of Jay Crowder, but that's sort of what Jay Crowder was. He can guard, you know, LeBron James, but he could also guard some smaller guys too, and gave you a lot of flexibility from a defensive matchup standpoint.
Absolutely. And, you know, Justice Winslow isn't the only part of the Grizzlies right now that people are kind of, I guess, concerned. I think it's just kind of more outrage and just instant gratification of everything. But, you know, these past two games have just, you know, really brought out the really concerned part of Grizzlies Twitter, whether it's the front office sabotaging with how they rested in that Phoenix game, or how just the offense looked out of sync against Dallas. And then you also have people questioning Coach Jenkins' rotation decisions when, at the beginning of the season, he was adamant about going 10 guys. And that even means if Sean McDermott's the 10th guy on any given night, he's going to continue to do that. And it's fair. It's what Coach King Kleiman has said is a data accumulation season. And so you're one person I saw on Twitter that kind of just, you know, a voice of reason, kind of just like calm everyone down. And you also offer a different perspective that you're not originally from Memphis, you know? You never had that, mm-hmm. the fan ties to any of it, like how I might have, or how your producer Connor Dunning might have, or other people around Grizzlies Twitter, I guess. So is there really much to be concerned about? Do you think we just kind of inflated our expectations a little bit because of how the team has performed thus far?
Well, I think in a micro sense, you should be concerned because they haven't played well the past two games. And, you know, one of the underlying reasons why they've been an overachieving team under Taylor Jenkins is they have very rarely had two clunkers in a row like this. And so whether they beat the Clippers or not, you do want to see them play better. You know, like the Clippers are obviously, if the Clippers are clicking, they're one of the best teams in the league, and it's going to be tough to beat them, even if you're playing well. But you'd like to at least see the Grizzlies play better after, you know, playing poorly the last couple games. And even the Detroit game that they won, that was a game where, you know, they didn't play great. They played well when they needed to win the game. But my whole point was just, honestly, they're hitting a rough patch of the schedule where to close out this first half of the season, you know, they might not be favored in more than maybe one game, the Washington game here of the next five. And I'm just not going to get into a tizzy over the fact that they lost two games that they were supposed to lose ultimately. You know, yes, there were some weird circumstances, especially in the Phoenix game where you're resting guys. But, you know, I think people are like Taylor Jenkins is a Greg Popovich disciple. This strategy of like just basically picking some games on the schedule based on rest and analytics and whatever, where like, you know what, we don't have a good shot of winning this even when we're at full strength. Let's rest guys so we have a better shot at winning some other games in the future, in the near future. Like, that's a strategy Popovich pioneered, and it's a strategy I think you need to get used to for the rest of the season with how compact the season is going to be the rest of the way. I do think we have a tendency to overinflate what's going on Twitter. You know, I think most Grizzlies fans in my mind, and maybe I'm off here, but most Grizzlies fans just were thinking, you know what, like they played two bad games and I want to see them play better. They're not thinking the front office is sabotaging us. I think when you may disagree with the strategy of, you know, selectively picking games where, you know what, we're not going to play everyone because we'd rather have them more rested for other games. But it's a strategy that, frankly, isn't, like, you know, cutting edge or something that no one else in the league is doing. What they're doing is pretty common. And it feels – I just don't think it's an unreasonable thing to do. They just need, you know, I think these last two games, they were exhausted. And I do think if you want to be concerned, it's being concerned about the fact that the type of volume of games they've had lately, that's what the rest of the year is going to be like. Because the second half schedule that was just released is brutal in terms of you're playing 40 games in, I think, 68 days. So I would just say get used to it. And rather than panic, it's just about, you know, I think it's, you know, this is going to be a really, really tough slog just based on the circumstances of the calendar.
Right, for sure. And I agree. It's not this uncommon practice that we see in the NBA. We're probably going to see it on Thursday or Friday with the Los Angeles Clippers. They're probably going to rest one of or both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George in one of those two games. And
well, my guess is they'll alternate them. Like one will sit one game and the other will sit the other game. It's what Houston did it when they came here for a back-to-back. Like that game where Houston played here, John Wall played and Victor Oladipo sat. Well, the night before, Oladipo played and John Wall sat. So, and I expect that's something the Clippers will do, something similar.
Right. And you allude to the brutal second half of the schedule where they play 40 games in a little under 70 days. But that doesn't even include, you know, there's a 7-game homestand or road trip that is the longest ever during the Memphis era of the franchise, per the PR release that I have up here. And, you know, there's a lot of tough opponents there. You have a few games against Denver. You have Dallas again. You have two or three games against Golden State. I mean, New Orleans, they're always a tough matchup. And
they closed the year, Parker, with 8 games in 11 days.
It's like, brutal.
It is, as I think we said on our show, it is as probably as daunting a schedule as any NBA team, just in terms, not necessarily the quality of the opponents, but in terms of having to play so many games in so few days, probably the most daunting schedule an NBA team has faced, I would guess, since that like 99 lockout year when they started in January and played like 50 some odd games in 3 months or something absurd like that. Like this is, I mean, they don't have more than one day off between games the rest of the year once they get back from the All-Star break. And they have 11 back-to-backs. And like you mentioned, a 7-game road trip. And, you know, that road trip is 7 games in 10 days, that road trip. Like, it's not just on the road. It's on the road, and they're one after the other after the other after the other, it feels like. And I'll be honest, it just – they've to this point, to this moment in time, overachieved in terms of what they were, what you expected them maybe to do, given all of the injuries. They, I think, are going to have to overachieve big time, even with Jaren coming back, to overcome this schedule and kind of, you know, like I think it's going to be, you know, you look at this schedule and I just think it's going to be very hard to be one of the top 10 teams, not because they're not good enough to do it. But if the past couple weeks were any indication, it's just by the end of the year, man, they're going to be exhausted.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we didn't even mention the quality of opponents in that 7-game road trip. You have Chicago, Milwaukee, Denver twice, Portland twice, and then the Clippers. So that's going to be brutal. And they're also going to have 17 games in April, which that – and also, too, with the limited rest they have, it's I don't know how to gauge expectations with a schedule like that or anything. Do you have any sort of expectations for the second half of the season?
I mean, I think what you're holding out hope for is that, you know, you get down to that final stretch and you're in the mix for the play-in, for one of those play-in spots. I think that's what you hope for if you're a fan right now. Like, hopefully Jaren comes back. That provides you a boost. But again, like with the way the schedule's set up, like honestly, they're gonna have this All-Star break. They got 6 days off. Hopefully they'll probably rest up, get 3-4 days off, then have a couple practices. And frankly, they might not have another real practice the rest of the year. I really like you're gonna need to give these guys as much time off as possible. Like, you're gonna have walkthroughs at shoot arounds, and that's about it, I would think. And so that makes it a little more complicated, frankly, working in Justice Winslow, working in Jaren Jackson Jr. You're gonna have to do it in these games. A lot like you're sort of trying to do it right now with Justice Winslow, where, you know, you set it up so that his first game was a game where he could just take a bunch of shots and it didn't really matter that much. And so a lot of different extenuating circumstances that wouldn't exist in a normal NBA season that are going to affect the Grizzlies here. And hopefully, you know, I think it's about, honestly, just staying afloat and give yourself a chance those last 10 games to kind of play your way in to the play-ins. I think that's sort of how you have to look at it if you're the Grizzlies. I don't know. Maybe you think differently.
Yeah, no, I kind of think everything is kind of a win-win, I guess, because on one hand, you know, if they make the playoffs, they get through this stretch, then you're getting valuable playoff minutes for guys like John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. And even it's going to be important for guys like Desmond Bane and De'Anthony Melton, Brandon Clark, guys who could step in alongside Jar or Jaren down the road. But also on the other hand, too, I don't think they'll ever get down to where they were in like the 17-18 or even the 18-19 season in the lottery odds. But that's just another chance to add a lottery talent next to John Jaren when, you know, at the beginning of the show, we said the third guy's not on this roster yet. That's probably their best shot they have, unless they make some sort of blockbuster deal that a lot of us dream of. But I kind of just think that I don't want to really gauge expectations when really it's year two of the rebuild and they're already kind of ahead of schedule. Because at the beginning of last season, we all thought that Boston would have the pick in 2021 or that it was a really, really strong possibility. But that's just wrong.
Yeah, I do think it's important, though. I don't want to see them crater and be playing meaningless basketball down the stretch. Right. But I think that would, one, it would be a bad sign if you have, it would be a bad sign for the Ja, Jaren, Justice trio, if you will, if they just kind of crater once they get everyone back and they're, you know, just, get, you know, basically in the lottery and not like it's one thing to be in the lottery and it's like the last, you know, last four or five games of the season, you fall out of the race. It's another thing if they like, you know, Jaren comes back and it really looks bad and they crater in the last 20 games of the year are meaningless. So that's how I would look at it. I know like people talk about the pick, but I do think it's also important to, you know, it's important to continue, you know, it's important for Ja, Jaren, and Justice to have some success together too. Because I suspect unless Justice plays like he's just played the first two games, if he plays like this for the next 40 games, maybe they don't pick up his player option for next year, pick up the team option on his contract. But my guess is as long as he shows glimpses of being what they think he might be, they're going to run this back next year with Justice Winslow. They're going to pick up that team option. And so you want to make sure, you know, I mean, this is about figuring out if they can have success together. And, you know, it obviously would be better if it works than if it doesn't. So I guess that's how I look at it. You're right. There is no horrible outcome in all of this. You know, ultimately the worst case is you're in the lottery and you get a chance to add another, you know, significant piece to the puzzle. But, you know, I'm the type of person, I'm the type of fan, if you will, that, you know, I don't want to, I like trying to win as many games as possible. I like the way they're doing it. I like the way how they are a competitive team, but they are making sure that their eyes are always on the future. I like the way they're doing it right now. I think they're taking the right approach.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can never say enough of how much I like what the Grizzlies are doing, especially with just staying competitive, but also have an eye on the future, whether it's something as small as just playing Xavier Tillman over Gorgui Dieng, who is kind of a veteran that's more of a trade asset, and then Xavier Tillman's a guy that could eventually be a good role player. But I also do think with the whole cratering thing, I think the play-in really helps because you could be 5 or 6 games out of 8, but you could be a game out of 10 and you still get a chance to play for that 8 seed in a sense. The play-in situation is still really weird and foreign to me. I don't really know a whole lot of how it works, but it should be fun. But Mark, we'll get you out on this because I know a lot of people are really antsy and eager for this player to return, and that's Jaren Jackson Jr. And I had actually caught up with the SB Nation's Dallas Mavericks blog before the game the other night, just asking about Kristaps because they had the same injury and different timelines. And for him, it's awful with Dallas and Porzingis because he wants to trade him for whatever they can get. He's been a shell of himself defensively, and it's kind of led to their defense cratering. And as we saw the past 2 nights for Dallas, they look better without Kristaps Porzingis right now. And it leads me to ask this to close the show. Are you totally fine with the timeline that they're on with Jaren Jackson Jr. right now for both injury prevention, but also just easing him back into playing to, you know, prevent a situation like we're seeing with Dallas for Kristaps Porzingis?
Well, it feels like, I mean, right around now, if you look at the timeline for the repair of a meniscus, they say it can take up to 6 months. Well, we're right at 6 months, and, you know, I suspect they'll probably wait till after the All-Star break, but I suspect soon after the All-Star break, we will see Jaren Jackson Jr., and that's sort of what I thought maybe he'd come back around now, and you'd have him play some games before the All-Star break. But I also thought Justice was going to be back earlier than he ended up being back. So I think you probably don't want to bring Jaren back right now because you're already trying to work Justice into the rotation. So hopefully over these next 4 or 5 games for the All-Star break, you figure out exactly what you want to do with Justice. Justice figures out how he fits in, and then you add this new piece of Jaren Jackson Jr., to the puzzle, a piece that is a lot easier, hopefully. You know what he does with these players. He's done it. He did it all last year. So I would not say I'm concerned. Again, if we're talking this micro-macro, in a micro sense, I am not concerned that Jaren Jackson Jr. is not back yet. I expect he'll be back soon. In a macro sense, I do think it bears watching how he comes back from this knee injury because he hasn't finished a season yet. He's been injured both seasons he's played in the NBA. He will have missed a pretty decent chunk of games in all 3 seasons he's played, no matter how this works out the rest of the way this year. So in a macro sense, I am paying attention. Aaron, from here on out, stay healthy consistently. Is this the last of his health issues that we have for a while so that he can blossom like he looked like he was about to sort of blossom before this latest knee injury?
Right, for sure. And that's all for today's show. Mark, do you have any final comments before we close the show?
No, just get ready. It's gonna be rough on the players this second half. It seems to be rough on fans too. It's a lot of nights watching the Grizzlies. Hopefully get the honey-do list done now. Or, you know, get it done now so that you have plenty of time every night to watch the Grizzlies because it's going to be fast and furious.
Oh, it's going to be crazy. And, you know, it's a lot more time of everyone on Grizzlies Twitter just interacting with each other and, you know, coming up with hasty takes after one game. But thank you, Mark, for coming on the show. You can follow him on Twitter at mgiannotto. He has the coolest profile picture on Grizzlies Twitter, to be honest, because he's interviewing a legend, Triple H. And you can listen to the Giannotto and Jeffrey Show every weekday from 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time. And make sure you're reading his work and subscribing to the Commercial Appeal. You can follow me on Twitter at Paca_Flocka. Make sure you are reading the blog at grizzlybearblues.com or on Twitter at SBNGrizzlies. And make sure you are following the podcast on Twitter at GBB Live. And make sure you're liking, subscribing, and downloading to the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network so you don't miss a single episode of any of our 4 shows. And with that, that's it.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.